Minneapolis, Minnesota presentation. Brian and Tina, I'm not sure which one of you is going to be starting off or presenting. You're both designated as presenters, so whenever you are ready, you can begin. And actually, I'm sorry, one quick thing before you get started, I should mention that following this presentation, there will be opportunity to ask questions of Minneapolis before we move on to the next presentation. So, go ahead.
All right, this is Brian Carey, and I work for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I've been the project manager for the ICM project here in Minneapolis, MnDOT kind of playing the lead role in this project. My normal job is I'm the freeway operations engineer at our regional transportation management center, pretty much in charge of the operations here at the center, so this kind of fits in nicely with kind of what our future plans are. We've really kind of focused primarily over the last 20, 30 years or so, the department has looked, you know, more at the freeways, so we're really kind of starting to move towards arterial traffic management, adding more systems out there, as well as incorporating it with what our transit agencies have done as well, and, you know, in the whole spirit of ICM, kind of integrating those different components together, as well as working with our local partners with the city and the county. So with that, I'll kind of get into it here. Before I kind of get too far into it, I will say that I've got Steve Misgan here in the room with me. Steve might jump in at certain points in terms of the arterial operations. Steve is in charge of the MnDOT signal operations unit, so I'll probably have him jump in on some of the signals questions or any of the signal slides. Tina Roloff, as well as Dean Dieter, who should probably be joining shortly here too. Both Tina and Dean are the consultants on this project, as well as Bob Green with Alliance, who I think is also on here. Sorry, I got a phone call here in the middle. They were basically hired to develop the CONOPS and the systems requirements, so I will probably have them jump in on any particular questions, but for the most part, I'll be giving the presentation. So for the 394 corridor, that's our ICM corridor. It's about a 9-mile stretch of freeway that was developed in the late 80s, early 90s. It was basically Highway 12 that was converted to an interstate highway, or interstate freeway rather. It serves the western suburbs of the Twin Cities coming into downtown Minneapolis. We also have two parallel corridors. We have Highway 55 to the north, which is an arterial corridor, and Highway 7 to the south, which is another arterial corridor. Both of those corridors, for the most part, are operated by the MnDOT signal operations folks. Until you cross the city limits of Minneapolis, coming in close to downtown. And at that point, then the control of those signals on those corridors is transferred to the city of Minneapolis. So you end up with a bit of a disconnect there. Still the same road, still a MnDOT road, but the actual control and operations of that transfers over from the state to the city. Highway 7 is even a more interesting type situation. Highway 7, as you approach Highway 100, and if I can figure out how to do the pointer here, right at Highway 100, Highway 7 actually ends. The road doesn't actually end, but the designation of Highway 7 ends. It changes into County Road 25, which then changes into Lake Street, Lake Street being a city street. So within probably about a 2-mile stretch, I'd say, we switch from a state-operated road to a county-operated road to a city-operated road in a very short distance. And of course, you know, we from the agency side might see it that way, but from the motorist perspective, they don't really notice anything any different because it's still the same roadway. We also have a number of connector roads that connect these three segments. You can see in yellow we have 494 on the west end, the freeway. Oops, my screen just went gray here. Did everybody else lose the presentation?
No, I'm still seeing it. Let me see here. Looks
like it says it's loading content. There it goes. It's back.
You got it? Okay.
Anyway, we've got essentially three freeway corridors, 494, 169, and 100, that essentially connect these three corridors, as well as some county and some city-operated roadways, such as County Road 73, Louisiana Avenue, Penn Avenue. These are basically roadways that connect services as maybe connector roads, so that if there's an incident on one of the three primary corridors, they provide that connection to get from one corridor to the other. So why does our site need ICM? Well, I'm sure, you know, kind of the basic reason is there's locations of recurring congestion on the corridor. We got here represented with kind of the orange circles, number of bottlenecks along the 394 corridor, as well as the number of interchanges that are performing poorly on 55 and 7 at the signalized intersections. And then on Highway 7, as we come into Minneapolis, we have 7 turning into 25, turning into Lake Street, which then you have to turn onto Hennepin Avenue. That corridor there is a very heavily congested corridor, kind of going through our uptown area. That's a very complicated area and very hard to get more traffic through there. So looking at maybe some opportunities to improve traffic flow through that area as an alternate way to get into downtown Minneapolis. These two graphs represent the travel time on 394, so just focusing in on the that corridor in particular being kind of the primary corridor for our ICM. These reflect the maximum, the minimum, and the average travel time for the corridor for both eastbound and westbound. So first, starting off with the eastbound direction, we can see time of day on the x-axis, which probably doesn't show up too well on this slide, and then the actual travel time on the y-axis. So the orange line in the middle essentially reflects what that median travel time is during the month of October of 2005, I believe, when we pulled this data. Then that has kind of that buffer time or that trip reliability. We can see the blue line is the maximum travel time, with kind of the lighter gray-colored line on the bottom reflecting the minimum travel time. So you could see quite a bit of fluctuation there between that maximum and the minimum. You know, there's quite a bit of fluctuation in that early morning peak, but the afternoon is by far worse. In the afternoon, since it's inbound, we don't see a whole lot of, like, commuter traffic going inbound, but we do see a lot of event traffic. We've got, at the very end of the corridor, right when you come into downtown Minneapolis, we have the Target Center, which is where our basketball team plays, but also next door to that, we have a new twin stadium for our baseball team that's currently under construction. So that's going to be raising some new challenges in the near future once that stadium opens. And we also have a large theater district with a lot of restaurants and theaters for plays and musicals and such that really adds to that variability of that travel time in the afternoon. So there's a lot of times you might not see any congestion, but then other days you can see some very severe congestion where you can see a doubling and sometimes even a tripling of the travel time. Westbound is a little bit more directional, not as much of an issue there. We do have just kind of that PM peak commute time as people are heading out of Minneapolis and heading towards the western suburbs. So you only see kind of that travel time increase in the afternoon. There is kind of that late evening, and that's really when some of those events let out. So again, some impacts there that you see from event congestion. What we also have on the 394 corridor, I'm going to go back a little bit to the map, is we do have a hot lane that's been operational since 2005, which does have congestion pricing on it, a variable price that actually changes every 3 minutes based on real-time traffic conditions. We also have from the Highway 100 interchange to essentially downtown Minneapolis, we have a reversible section, a two-lane reversible section, which is our hot lane, that operates two lanes inbound in the morning and two lanes outbound in the afternoon. So getting back on track here with the presentation, some of the reasons why we need ICM is a lot of gaps in coordination between the traffic side as well as the transit management centers. Not only during normal conditions, but especially during incident conditions. I think one of the things we kind of identified right away was that both 55 and Highway 7 corridors, and then the corridors leading into downtown Minneapolis, really weren't sitting there totally unoccupied and having a lot of spare capacity. They're already very full roads. There might not be a whole lot of opportunity in terms of the normal peak period and recurring congestion, maybe some spot improvements here and there to maybe add some transit benefits, like transit signal priority, maybe improve some signal timing and more coordinated timing, especially when you get a corridor like Highway 7 that transfers from a state to a county to a city in a very short distance. But for the most part, looking at kind of those incident conditions, you know, what can we do when there's a crash or when there's those special events to decrease that that fluctuation in the trips, in the travel time, and improve that trip reliability? This chart shows essentially what is operated by the different agencies. You can see on the map there, everything in yellow is MnDOT controlled. But as you get closer into the city, you can see those MnDOT roadways that turn into county, which is represented in blue, and then city, which is represented in green. We also have a couple of roadways. We got Louisiana Avenue represented in red, that's controlled by St. Louis Park. And we also have another corridor that's County Road 5, which it sits between Highway 7 and 394, that is a county road, and we looked at that originally as maybe kind of an alternative to Highway 7 and I-394, but the type of roadway it is probably doesn't really make it a very usable corridor as an alternate route, because it's a two-lane roadway and kind of through a lot of areas goes through some residential streets, so we wanted to try to focus more on the 55 and 7 corridors that could handle that additional capacity and that additional traffic. We also had gaps in incident data on the arterial network. For the most part within the metro area, our state patrol responds to all freeway incidents. But when we get to arterial highways, even state-run arterial highways, it's usually the local police department that responds to those. We have really good coordination with our state patrol. We actually are in the same center with them. We share the same CAD system with them. So we really know the freeway system very well in terms of what incidents are going on. They're also fully instrumented with cameras and detection and stuff. But the gap really comes on that local network. We really aren't getting any information when the local police departments are responding to crashes on the system on that local network, even though they might be our highway. So we're looking at ways that we can integrate with their CAD systems and get data sharing from them, and then also just kind of improving center-to-center communications with them. As well as once we can start getting that information, looking at putting cameras and signs on those corridors so we can monitor those situations and then provide information to the motoring public on those situations. On the transit side of things, we really lack traveler information for both arterials and for transit. We've done a really good job of the freeways, so now we're kind of looking at these other networks and modes. So we're looking at ways, can we provide travel times? We provide travel times on our freeways. We're looking at ways to provide travel times in our arterials, which I'll get into in a little bit, as well as travel times for our transit folks. And then providing a comparative travel time, either via signs, via 511, telephone, or website. Also providing park and ride lot availability. We have a number of park and rides along the corridor, providing information on the occupancy of those, when they fill up, and giving that information, again, either via signs or via a website. And as I've kind of mentioned already, planning for those special events, there are ways that we can improve that trip reliability so we don't end up with those really big peaks during these events. In anticipation of that future Minnesota Twin Stadium, as well as the existing Minnesota Timberwolves Stadium. So how is ICM going to help our site? Really, by providing that traveler information across all networks and modes, providing that freeway travel time, providing that transit travel time, and that arterial travel time, as well as incident information, too, across all those different networks and modes. Like I mentioned, trying to get more incident information on the arterials, becoming better aware of what's going on in those systems, rather than finding out about it maybe, you know, 10, 15 minutes into the incident by getting it through word of mouth or through a secondhand source, actually getting it directly from those police departments in more of a real-time capability. And then again, that park and ride lot availability, really giving the motorist information on the different options that are out there so they can make a choice, an informed choice, and an informed decision on whether or not they want to take the freeway, the arterial, or transit that day. And really kind of the big thing is in improving a lot of that agency communication and coordination, improving our coordination during incident management, again, with those arterial type systems, but then also we've kind of recognized some gaps in, you know, we've worked very well even on the freeway, working well together with freeway operations and our state patrol, but we sometimes forget our partners over at transit who get greatly impacted by these things. They tend to find out that the road is closed when they see the squad cars closing the road down. Giving them more information more quickly so that they can start rerouting their buses ahead of time. And really overall, our goal would be to reduce congestion, which has a number of improvements in improving travel time and delay and emissions and improving safety by getting rid of congestion-related crashes. So there's a lot of benefits there other than just saying reduce congestion, and then also improving that trip reliability. So who's all involved in this ICM? Who's our stakeholders? Well, MnDOT. MnDOT broken up into many different areas, our freeway section, our arterial section, as well as our MnPass folks, which is the name of our hot lane. We also have Hennepin County, having their arterial folks, their traffic folks, heavily involved, as well as their emergency management dispatch. A lot of our local police departments, our suburban departments, rather than having individual dispatch centers, are actually dispatched out of the Hennepin County office. So that actually is an advantage for us in that we only have maybe one major dispatch center to tap into as opposed to every single city agency. And they're also looking to, they should be online already here soon, they're implementing a CAD system within Hennepin County that will include all those local agencies. City of Minneapolis 2 is also going on to a new CAD system. The city would be the only major city along this corridor that is not integrated in with that Hennepin County dispatch. They have their own dispatch center, so we'd have to integrate with them, as well as their traffic folks. Within the city of Minneapolis, whether it's a city road, a county road, or a state road, the city is operating those signals. So we've been really working with them a lot because we want to get, you know, this traffic into downtown Minneapolis, not just to their city limits. So we really need to coordinate well with them so that we can kind of you know, improve that gap there in the communications at those signalized intersections. For our transit agencies, we have three primary agencies on this corridor. Metro Transit is operated by our Metropolitan Council, probably the largest agency there in terms of running bus service throughout the metro area. Then we have some suburban transit folks from Southwest Transit as well as Plymouth Transit from the City of Plymouth. Metro Transit is more of a local service along 384, so they actually stop at all the different park and ride lots and provide kind of local service to the corridor, where Southwest and Plymouth are picking up folks outside of the corridor but then using the corridor as a way to get from those suburban areas into downtown. So they're using it as more of a an express service. And then we have our Minnesota State Patrol as a major stakeholder as well. Just the slides. Oh, it's acting funny on me again here. I'll give it a second here to load up on my end.
Okay, if it doesn't come back, let me know and I can just continue advancing the slides for you.
Okay. Okay, it's coming back up now.
Okay.
So, how are set to find some of the roles and achieve buy-in along the ICM stakeholders? As I mentioned already, MnDOT played the lead role. We hired a couple of consultants, or one consultant with a couple subs, essentially to write the CONOPS and the SRS. The primary consultant was AP Creek with Alliant being the sub. So they did most of the technical work in writing the documents. We had essentially two different groups. We had a steering committee and a working group that included members of the different stakeholders. The steering group being more of kind of the, I guess you'd say more of the management level or supervisory level, and the working group maybe being more of the technical level. It ended up, as time went on, those groups kind of ended up fusing together, that it kind of made sense because some of the managers started just kind of delegating the steering committee group to that technical person anyway. So we had the same person at both meetings, and so we just kind of fused the two meetings together. And I think that just kind of reflects maybe be some of the resource issues amongst all the different departments, that it's very hard to dedicate a lot of staff time to one particular project. But we still did get a lot of the stakeholders participating still in one shape or form. We did have a stakeholder workshop as we developed the concept of operations. We had a workshop to maybe identify some of the work that had been done already, kind of present a draft, and then try to work through maybe some of the gaps that we still had to fill in. But probably the biggest thing that we ended up doing, and I know it maybe sounds a little bit counter to the whole mission of ICM, but it would sometimes be very difficult in these workshops as well as these working groups when you had all the different partners there. They still wanted to tend to talk a little bit in their own areas and their own silos. So it was tough to get a little bit of the detailed information out of the different agencies. And so we really ended up having kind of individual stakeholder meetings where we went out and we talked with just the transit providers, and then we went out and we talked with just the arterial signals folks. Really got to know what their user needs were, what their gaps were from those individual, agency levels. But then we'd bring them all back together again at the workshop and kind of summarize what all those concerns were, and then kind of point out things like, saying to the law enforcement side that, transit's not getting the information fast enough and it really impacts their transit system. So it kind of had different levels of effort and different levels of meetings as time went on. And we had kind of a core group, a project management team group, so that it wasn't just myself working with the consultants, but we kind of had one person from our signal operations folks kind of representing the arterial side, and one person from our transit side, Gary Nyberg from Metro Transit, who just stepped into the room, actually, and he kind of represented the transit end, and then we had our project management team from the consultant side. So as we were developing it, that way we could set up, agendas for meetings, who we need to go out to talk to, maybe who we were missing, so that wasn't just me being kind of the project manager, but rather kind of a core group of us. And the graph on the right really kind of represents what kind of our objectives were with including those stakeholders. We have a lot of existing systems out there, a lot of existing field devices, and then we have some planned systems and field devices. At the same time, we have some software and field device integration that we'd be looking at adding with ICMS. But all those really kind of work independently of each other unless you have this kind of overall larger umbrella that covers all of them with these partnerships and these agreements and these actions to support our ICM. So that's where it was really important to get these stakeholders identified and get their buy-in to the system. We didn't want to, just throw new technology out there only to have it not maintained and not operated and become obsolete in just a matter of a few years. So what does our system look like? Diagram here on the right is essentially a logistical diagram to kind of show some of the information exchange throughout the system. Everything you see in yellow is essentially what we're proposing as an ICMS system. We have essentially an ICMS data hub in the middle, which the data hub being what it is where all the information is passed through, whether that's travel time information, incident information, video, any being shared through the different centers. The different centers that are represented in blue as the existing, so we have Metro Transit, we have our MnDOT through operations side, we have over here what's known as our ABC garages on the right-hand side. What those are is there are some large parking structures at the end of the 394 corridor. They're actually owned by the DOT and run by the city. They were actually constructed as part of the 394 corridor, and they actually have direct access to and from the freeway right into those garages. On the top, we have our three different emergency management partners, the City of Minneapolis, the Hennepin County, and the State Patrol. And on the bottom, we have our traffic folks, the City of Minneapolis again, Hennepin County, and our MnDOT traffic operations folks. And I should also note that the Metro Transit Control also kind of includes our partners at Southwest and Plymouth MetroLink. So the yellow portions that you see added onto those blue is essentially enhancements that would have to be done to existing systems in order to allow them to communicate through the data hub with other systems. So really ICMS incorporates everything within that larger kind of light yellow box. So it's not just a data hub, a server that sits in the middle, but rather kind of pieces on all these systems connected together. Do, Jennifer, is it's doing it to me again. I'm going to open up the presentation and the PowerPoint, and I'll have you walk through the slide.
That's fine. We could do that.
It seems to be doing it about every third or fourth slide here.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there.
I think it might be on my end. It keeps saying it's loading Adobe software.
Huh.
Okay. So if you want to go to the next slide here, it shows the logistical diagram, Metro Transit Control Center. What this diagram does is we took that overview diagram that I just showed you, took each one of those blue boxes and essentially broke it up into each center to show what type of information is communicating through that center. We have our data hub is kind of reflected as that yellow circle on the top, and you can see how that's communicating with the addition that's being added to the Metro Transit Control Center system. That system being kind of an AVL system for their buses. So they're getting information currently from their buses, from their AVL system, and they're able to calculate like some transit travel times with that AVL. So to use this as an example, instead of walking through every single one of these lines of communication, let's use transit travel time as an example and how we'd want to communicate that with and compare that to the freeway system. So those buses with that AVL system, we're able to collect a travel time. That travel time information is calculated and stored in the Metro Transit's existing system. The information essentially coming from the bus is then transferred over to the MTCC system. With the enhancements to that system, that information is then communicated with the data hub to the freeway operations side of MnDOT with our Regional Transportation Management Center. On our end, we're already calculating a travel time for the vehicles. So through that connection point, now we can deploy a sign or deploy that onto a website, that data. Now, what we're doing a little bit different is that data hub does not necessarily mean that we've got an independent server that's sitting somewhere to be determined that collects this data, compiles it, and then spits it back out. Instead, we're almost looking at like a virtual data hub. One of the things that we already do at MnDOT with our freeway data is we're posting all of our loop detector data, speeds, occupancy, density, volumes, all on a website that's updated every 30 seconds. And anybody who's basically got web access can access that. So a lot of our media partners are getting that information, creating their own speed maps with it. We can post all the travel times on that website as well. So instead of having a hardwired connection or an independent server out there that raises the question of, okay, who owns that server, who maintains that server, who operates that server, instead we've just got kind of these virtual connections through the internet and sharing that data. And it's all public information, so if we're already posting the travel times, Metro Transit can grab those travel times and post them to their website to compare to their transit travel times, and we could do the same, you know, either way, I guess, depending on how we want the information to be shared. But if our media partners want to grab that information, too, that just increases our flexibility and our ability to get that information out to the motoring public, because a lot of times they can distribute it easier than maybe we can distribute it as a public agency. So really kind of leaning on those media partners to help distribute that information. Okay, if you can go to the next slide.
Okay.
So the next slide kind of shows the interaction on our end. Sorry, this is a functional diagram. What we did when we were creating our SRS is we created a logistical diagram that kind of showed how information was being shared from a field device to an agency or center, and then to the data hub, and then to another agency or center. So that kind of showed more of a higher level picture. Then we broke it down into kind of these functional diagrams that take that blue box in the middle and really explain, okay, what systems, what calculations, what databases are within that blue box. So I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail here, other than just to say that we really wanted to know what was going on in that blue box so that when we were developing our systems requirements, we understood what kind of links were needed, what kind of databases were needed, what calculations were already being performed versus what calculations needed to be performed in order to get our ICM system to work. So it really helped in identifying those gaps, identifying those needs as we developed that SRS. And I'll get into that a little bit later, but I think if we were to go back and do this again as kind of a lessons learned, we started developing some of our systems requirements without really fully developing our diagrams. And it kind of made it a little bit complicated because we're developing simultaneously, and we found that our diagrams, maybe we didn't identify all those gaps and didn't identify all those connection points. And so we ended up rewriting a lot of our systems requirements, and we ended up kind of changing the order and how we configured the systems requirements in terms of how we broke them down into different sections, different, you know, chapters, if you will. I think if I was to do it again, I would make sure that my diagrams were as well developed and well thought out as they could be first, before really getting into some of those nuts and bolts and getting those systems requirements defined and created, so that we weren't having to keep going back and redeveloping things. Here's from the MnDOT traffic operations side then, to just kind of show how that data comes back in. So we have many different systems. We have our 511 system with the our CAR system that feeds the data into 511. We have an IRIS system that is basically our system that we developed in-house to control all of our field equipment. So all those systems would require some sort of addition to be able to communicate with the data hub or to communicate with these other centers. We also have our video switch. We do have some hardwired connections to Minneapolis traffic, as well as Metro Transit with direct fiber connections. But the direct fiber connections become very costly to try to do that with the other centers that we're not currently connected into. So we're looking at other ways that we can connect into those centers with like streaming video, for example. We actually were selected as the site for the Republican National Convention. So we're actually doing a lot of video connection with the RNC to allow some of these different agencies to communicate already. So we're going to actually have that in place by this fall already. And so ICMS kind of helps lead into that a little bit, because some of the discussions we were already having and different connections that we were needing, those ideas, those user needs were already kind of thought out, and it really kind of helped us in developing our plan for handling operations during the Republican National Convention. Do you want to go to the next slide? Died on me again here, so.
Okay.
This slide here, we have talking a little bit about the technical side of the arterial end of the ICMS. We have some planned instrumentation for 55 and Highway 7. We're using CMAQ funds to fully instrument those corridors with fiber, cameras, signal controller upgrades, interconnects. On both the 55 and 7 corridor, we have got that funded through CMAQ, and that will actually be constructed in 2011. So that kind of fits in nicely with our planned ICMS that will have those corridors fully instrumented by the time we get to the point that we're going to be looking at really integrating what's out there on the arterial side versus the freeway side. One of the gaps that we've recognized right away, and I'm sure everybody kind of has recognized, is how do you provide arterial travel time information? That's kind of a key component of providing those comparative travel times, but we really don't know how to achieve that quite yet. And I'm going to let Steve Miskin jump in here a little bit, because we've got a couple of test projects that we're looking at, and have him maybe kind of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, like Brian said, one of our main goals here is trying to get, you know, the ability to compare travel times between the different modes. Presently, MnDOT's sponsoring two research projects to develop travel times on the arterials. Both are planning on using data that exists from the traffic signals, and maybe a little historic data, but very little. We've also evaluated a cell phone-based travel time, and we're also evaluating historical GPS-based system developing travel time, so we hope to have some stuff or some research data at least fairly soon. We are also involved in a joint research project or a peer project or something looking at our arterial travel times as well. One thing that we've kind of stumbled across, or we've kind of known, but that's being kind of hammered into us, is the technology you end up using or looking at, it kind of depends on what you actually need the information for, whether you're going to use it for planning or along those lines, or if you want to do operational, use it to develop travel times. So it's kind of makes your choice on what kind of technology you're actually going to use for travel times on arterials.
All right, thank you, Steve. Getting back here then to the third bullet, and I should probably maybe pick up the speed here. I'm probably talking a little bit too long. We have a lot of, our plan is to kind of develop, jointly developed incident signal timing plans, and I think I'm going to kind of skip ahead there a little bit in the interest of time and explain that a little bit better on a future slide here. What we're looking at with on the transit side is we have existing AVL systems in Metro Transit, but one of the gaps and one of the challenges we have is that our Plymouth Metro Links as well as our Southwest Transit does not currently have AVL systems. Fortunately, there is kind of a project that's running, you know, parallel to this that is looking to deploy AVL systems on those transit agencies, and hopefully that'll be in place in the next couple of years. We do have our challenge in providing accurate park and ride lot information. The geometrics of the lots weren't exactly prepared to handle that type of thing, so it's very hard to get accurate counts on those facilities. And providing kind of a comparative travel time between transit and freeway, and really to our arterial too. We got to make sure that we're really comparing apples to apples. Do we have a historical data versus real-time data? So maybe the exact moment in time doesn't quite line up. That could be kind of costly to either end of the side, where you might be giving bad information to the public because you're not really comparing the same thing at the same time. And we do have kind of a plan as part of our UPA project. We're looking at doing those comparative travel times. Okay, next slide. The next two slides really kind of show some of our performance measures, and I won't go through all these things, but we're looking at everything from, you know, improved trip reliability, improved travel times, maximizing throughputs across the different networks and modes, improving safety. There'd be a lot of different performance measures we'd look at trying to measure to see what kind of effectiveness ICMS has. Okay, next slide. And that's just kind of more of the same here, so we can go on to the next one. So some of our lessons learned in terms of operational. When we're working with the stakeholders, you know, one of the things we're kind of told with the systems engineering process is when you're developing the ConOps, to not focus on technology first. Well, it's actually very difficult to do, to get the stakeholders involved and get them interested. Remember going out to one of the stakeholders and saying, okay, what are your gaps, what are your needs, what things do you need to maybe improve your operations, what kind of communications gaps do you have? And the questions they would ask were, well, are you talking about putting cameras on this corridor? Like, well, we're not trying to focus on technology yet, we're trying to recognize the gaps first. And, you know, what are your needs? Do you have a need for cameras? So we kind of posed the question back to them. But it was hard to get stakeholders engaged in that sense. Another good way to probably engage the stakeholders is one of the pieces of the ConOps is the operational scenarios, which is kind of the last section of the ConOps. And that really kind of describes what your system is going to do from, you know, the user level as well as the agency level. And if I was to go back and do it again, I'd probably do those first. And it really kind of helped recognize some of those gaps, and it really helped in engaging the stakeholders, because then they could start to really visualize, you know, what it was that we had planned and what we were looking to develop. And we really kind of identified some areas that we just kind of assumed maybe some connectivity or coordination between different centers, but it actually didn't really exist or didn't exist as well as it could be. And we recognized some new partners, too, during that that discussion over those operational scenarios. We also identified some near-term strategies, and you can actually go to the next slide on that. We identified some things that we could implement at a low cost, even some no-cost options, that just through sitting at the table together, we recognized some gaps that we could fill very easily. We have a separate agency or a private consultant that actually runs our MinPass operations. So if anything happens on that corridor, we send out like an email or a text message to them to notify them of an incident happening on 394. Well, when our people who run those municipal garages heard about that, as well as our transit folks, they were like, well, hey, if you could give us that, you know, get us on that email list, then we too would find out about that information within a minute or two of the incident happening, as opposed to maybe 5 to 10 minutes into the incident, once it was kind of already too late to try to start diverting people. Now, ultimately, we would try to improve that with, you know, CAD to CAD or system integration, but that's, you know, very costly and more of a long-term strategy. And here was just kind of something that we're like, well, hey, it's a very low-cost way to do things, and it was just kind of a gap that we didn't realize was out there where we can fill very easily. Next slide. As probably everybody has heard, we had the 35W bridge collapse back in August. And actually, through some of the discussions and some of the partnerships we were really building with ICM, that really helped us during the bridge collapse. We really didn't have a whole lot of coordination, especially with like the City of Minneapolis Traffic Office, from the freeway side, a little bit from the arterial side. Our signals folks was talking to their signals folks, but freeways was really just kind of, we're working in our own silo. And ICM was starting to kind of already close those gaps, just through kind of the partnerships and the discussions we had, and that really helped us during the collapse. And we've kind of created after the collapse, we had weekly traffic operations meetings with freeways, arterials, and transit staff, and we're likely to continue that partnership in years to come and probably be a biannual meeting where we meet like every 6 months or so. Next slide. It's helped us in our urban partnership agreement, too. The urban partnership agreement is on a totally separate corridor on 35W, a slightly different section of 35W than where the bridge collapse was. But there we're converting HOV lines to hot lanes. But some of the same components of our adding arterial traffic management on Highway 13 and providing that traveler information for transit with park and ride lot availability, next bus arrival systems, travel time comparisons, and then improving traveler information across all those networks and modes. So a lot of the things that we were discussing as part of ICM really kind of fed into our UPA proposal. Next slide. Some of the institutional lessons learned, we had a lot of stakeholder concerns of the usefulness of ICM. A lot of very similar projects were done in the past, so it was kind of hard to maybe overcome the legacy of those past projects and those failures that occurred. And I think a lot of that kind of came into the fact that we identified a technology, found a place to put it, but we didn't really identify maybe those user needs and who's going to operate and maintain those things. So they kind of fell into disrepair and became a low priority. As I mentioned before, there's really a lack of spare capacity in alternative routes, so that was kind of a concern of some of the stakeholders, that you're putting freeway traffic on arterials that are already at capacity, so that was a concern to try to work through. So we ended up kind of focusing more on incident management and kind of improving that buffer time incident index. With the ownership, maintenance, and operations on the next slide, we had, you know, a lot of legal issues of having joint control of equipment. You know, like the City of Minneapolis was a little bit concerned with the DOT coming in and maybe overriding signals. So that would be some issues that were brought on the table that would have to be worked through with different agreements and partnerships as the ICMS is developed. deciding agency responsibility. We had to really kind of decide, well, you know, if we're adding new equipment out there, who's going to maintain this and who's going to be responsible for this? And that actually kind of helped to eliminate maybe some of the wish lists so that we didn't get, you know, cities that were just looking at this as an opportunity to get new equipment and new funding and wanted to throw out new stuff to try when it was kind of put on them that they would be responsible for operating and maintaining this and having those long-term costs. It kind of maybe held them back a little bit from creating that wish list. And then creating that virtual system by having kind of that virtual data hub as opposed to another box that somebody's got to operate and maintain, and who does that kind of helps eliminate some of those long-term costs. Next slide. And maintaining that stakeholder interest, too, is kind of a challenge. Making ICM a priority. We've all got other jobs going on, other tasks going on. Answering that question of what's in it for me, especially maybe from our law enforcement partners, what's going to be in it for them in getting this information out and sharing this information. So trying to address some of those questions. And we really kind of use some major incident debriefings as kind of a carrot to get people to attend some of the meetings and maybe kind of walk through those. And if you step to the next slide, we had a anchor rollover actually on the corridor as we were developing our ConOps and requirements document. Actually happened kind of as the documents were kind of coming into their final draft, but it helped us identify some last-minute gaps. And so we invited all of our incident management partners, but we also invited some of these traffic partners and transit partners that maybe aren't normally involved in a debriefing like this. And that helps kind of recognize that, you know, when we closed down the freeway and we maybe cleared this incident in a very timely manner, but what was the impact it did have on that arterial system and that transit system? And how could ICMS help improve that in the future? And finally, on my last slide, as I kind of mentioned already, in developing that system's requirements, you know, develop those functional diagrams and logistical diagrams first. It really helps you to create a picture of what the system is before you start getting into some of those nuts and bolts and what those requirements are going to be. And then finally, it was very challenging for us, and some of this stuff is new techniques that haven't been tried before. So, how do you set requirements for, like, say, travel time calculations for arterial and transit? You know, should it be updated every 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes? How often do you really need it? How long do you store that data? And what are the associated costs with that? The longer you store the data, the more data you store, the bigger the server you're going to need to store all that. So, sorry if I went a little long, but that's essentially us, our Minnesota ICMS.
Thank you, Brian. It's very helpful. Any questions for Brian verbally? You know how to do that, I think. And then we also have, I think, I don't know if we have a poll or not, Jen, do we?
No, there's no poll, but there are two questions that I saw typed in, so maybe we could start off with those.
Okay.
The first question was, did the MPO have any role in the ICM?
Not directly. Our Met Council does operate the Metro Transit, and so Metro Transit was a very key agency in this, working alongside with us on both kind of that project management team as well as in the different steering committee and working group meetings. And we had briefings to upper management at Metro Transit as well. So since this was more of kind of an ITS type project, our MPO doesn't get as heavily involved in that and kind of that operations side, but indirectly with Metro Transit as a division, they were involved in that respect.
And that actually varies from pioneer site to pioneer site. In the Oakland area, the MPO and MTC is a much bigger player and almost like a co-manager of the program. In Dallas, for example, the transit agency is a leader in the ICM program project. So I think from site to site, pioneer site to pioneer site, you see a variety of institutional structures and leadership roles. So I know some sites the MPO is more of an indirect player and some it's more of a leadership role.
Okay. The next question typed in is, if ITS regional architectures existed, can you please discuss how they were either used or will be modified in defining the various CONOPS and project requirements?
Won't give a whole lot of detail, I guess, but just kind of in brief, our latest architecture was designed or developed, I want to say, in about 2001, so it's actually getting a little old. This does fit some of the pieces of the ICMS do fit in with the architecture in terms of the kind of the goal and planning of connecting existing centers and some of the things we're doing with signal operations and integration there. We are currently in the process of modifying our architecture. That's in draft form right now. So any areas that ICMS has maybe kind of expanded on that architecture, we'll make sure to incorporate that in this next draft of the architecture that will probably be finalized in the next coming months.
Okay. We don't seem to have anything else typed in. I guess we can, if anybody wants to ask a question over the phone, we'll open that up, and it's star one if you have a question.
There are no questions on the phone.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Dale, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, I think so. So I believe next in line we have Houston.
Oh,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, a question just came up.
Great.
Dan Seiss. Hi, my name's Dan. I work for a company that manufactures sensors that collect data for you. What type of sensors did you use to collect your data? Like side-firing, radar, loops, look-down cameras, a combination of them all? I'm just curious.
You're asking Minnesota that question? Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. On our freeway system, we use primarily loops. We got probably 4,500 loops out there in the system, covering about 300 miles of system. We've actually been very happy with the loops. I know a lot of people don't like them because of the maintenance headaches and stuff like that, but we find them have a much lower capital cost. We get pretty good data from them. And as far as the ongoing maintenance, we have all internal maintenance folks. I can't quote off the top of my head what some of our maintenance costs are, but I'd say at any given time, our failure percentage of the loops is in the single digits. It's probably like in the 5% or less range. 3% is what somebody's telling me right now in the room. So, you know, 97-98% of our system at any given time is up and running and calculating data. We get loop data back every 30 seconds. We've got probably 15 years worth of archive data on this corridor, as well as most of our system, depending on when the system was put in place. And what we're looking at on the local system, on the arterial system, sorry, we really have a lot of loops out there today.
No video.
We haven't used any video. We've tried it, but we've had too many issues with video of counting shadows and I'm sure all the other issues that people have kind of seen before. And so we haven't used like a whole lot of side scan or anything like that. We've done some of like the Wavetronics as temporary and work zones, but that's about it.
Thank you very much.